Luke, I'm an alcoholic. You guys really cut to the chase. You get started right away. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, the way I feel about speaking, because I haven't done it very much, is that I'm not really that important. I'm just a guy up here who's had some experience that's led me to this place. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm no better, no worse, really not that much different at all than you. And my experience is my experience. And it may be a little different than yours, you know, but hopefully something that I've experienced may be able to relate to yours, and maybe you'll hear something that you like or something you don't like. I don't know. I don't care, you know, but it's my experience. So I'm just here to, I've known Billy for a couple of years now, before I ever got sober, actually, and I've actually only gotten to know him well since I've been sober. I've really not had much of an interest in any sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous until I actually decided to be active and involved in this thing. But I've known Billy and Lynn for a couple of years, and I see these folks at conferences that we go to all around the state and in different states. And I moved away to Asheville, North Carolina about an hour or a year and a half ago, almost 2 years, from Richmond, Virginia, where I got sober. And since I've been in Asheville, is when I actually started to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got an AA sponsor as soon as I moved down there. I had moved down there with a sponsor in AA, but it was a guy, he was a real nice guy, and we had a good relationship. But as soon as I moved down there, I didn't see him anymore, and I was really just kind of a free floater. You know, I really didn't have much more responsibility. I didn't see him, so, you know, I didn't call him on a regular basis. So I was really just kind of floating along, going my own way, and I was going to meetings on a regular basis. I've always gone to 4 meetings a week. It's what I've been told. It's what I heard before I ever got sober, before I ever even thought AA would work for me. And I've always gone to 4 meetings. And so I was going to 4 meetings a week, and I'd been sober for about a year and a half at that time, and things just really weren't really meshing that well. I wasn't really feeling like I was fitting in down there. I was in a new area, getting to know people, and I had gotten to know some young people down there and making some friends, but I really wasn't growing at all. And I had continued to talk to this guy that I knew in this area, and he eventually became my sponsor. And I've since become quite more active than I would have ever imagined myself being an Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I couldn't imagine going to any more than 4 meetings a week, which is what, you know, I go always at least to 4, sometimes 4 or 5, 6, 7, sometimes more, in conferences on the weekends and travel here and there and everywhere. And it's what I want to do with my life, and it wasn't before. And that's not a change that I just made happen in my life. I didn't just one day wake up and decide, I want to be gung-ho about this thing. I didn't wake up and just say, I'm going to do AA outright, and just that's all I'm going to do, and you know, I didn't do that. It didn't happen naturally like that for me. I spent some time around AA when I was 17 years old, and I heard a lot about, you know, all this stuff, sponsorship and cleaning up and all these rules are what I thought I was hearing, and stuff that I really wasn't interested in. And I, you know, the only thing I was really interested in was the coffee and the cookies. And that was good. You know, and that kept me coming for a little while. So I had heard about AA and the 12 steps. I remember I was in a treatment center once, and one of those counselors asked me, we had, you know, the 12 steps up on the wall like you see all the time. He asked me, do you think those 12 steps there would you know, possibly be helpful to you at any time in your life? I thought, you know, what for? Why? What use? Why me? I'm too young, you know, I'm too cool, and I'm too smart, you know. I can figure this stuff out, and I don't need it, you know, and I may have had, you know, I know some alcoholics, but, you know, I may have, you know, I've got some friends of mine that may need this stuff further down the road, but, you know, no way, no how. And, you know, so I had, from the time I was actually 16 and 17 years old, I had really learned a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous without any desire to. I have, my father is here tonight, and I spent the day with him and the rest of my family with my sisters graduating from high school, or from college today, I'm sorry. And my parents did all kinds of things for me. You know, they sent me to different kinds of treatment centers and to different kinds of programs, long-term, short-term, all kinds of stuff. And I found a lot of those things helpful. One in particular, I was at this place for about a year, and I decided at one point I had enough of it, and I had learned so much, and I really liked a lot of things about it, but I was just kind of fed up, you know, above my head. I was done with it. And I was ready to leave, and I was just a little more than 18 at that time, and I decided I was going to leave, and that I had learned all that I could, and that I really didn't need to stay there anymore, despite that they thought that I should. And so I went ahead and left, and I was going to do all right. You know, I left, and I was 18 at this time. I had 1 year in high school left to do. And I was going to do all right. And I was going to start going to new school. And I was going to be driving myself to school. And I was just going to focus on school, and that was it. And things were, I was really convinced that things were really going to be really different this time. That I had learned so much about my condition and my relationships with other people and my selfishness and my dishonesty and how to share my feelings and things like that. I was really convinced, I had convinced myself that I would be able to control any kind of impulses, any kind of urges that I might have to drink, and I would be able to keep myself on the straight and narrow, and that I'd really be all right. Because I had, you know, there had been money put into this stuff, and I had time, and just, you know, so much went into this, and I was really sure. About a month after leaving this place, by the way, I have a certain perspective on my story that my family members, my father in the room, may have a completely different perspective on. So if you want to check anything, you know, against my perspective, feel free to talk to him after the meeting. So I left that place, and I was, about a month after that, I had the opportunity to go visit my sister who graduated from college today, and I went to see her at her college, and she was on a rugby team, and I guess rugby players like to party. She's not a real big partier, but she likes to have fun. And they had a party on the night before the game, and I was going to, you know, I was just going to go spend some time with my sister and getting involved in whatever she was doing and just be social and have fun. And I was really excited to see her and spend time with her. And the night started out just fine, and we ended up in somebody's dorm room. And they were drinking in there, having a good time, just like, you know, college students do, I'm sure. And I had no intentions of having a drink, of having two drinks, of having any drinks. I had no intentions. You know, I didn't think about this beforehand. You know, I didn't think I'm going to go and get drunk. And I didn't think, you know, I'm going to not get drunk. I didn't even think about it at all, really. I was just there to have a good time with my sister. And somehow, I don't even know how it happened. I don't remember picking up this drink, but I ended up with one drink in my hand. And I drank one. And the classic thing for an alcoholic like me is that when I have another one, I'm just naturally going to have another one. And so I had another, and I don't know, I probably had four or five at this point, and my sister came into the room, and she said, "Luke, you're cut off. You've had enough. You've been drinking a couple, and you've obviously had enough, and you need to stop." And I said, "All right, you're probably right. I'll stop." And as soon as she walked out the door, I reached into the fridge and grabbed another one. And that night ended, I don't know, I guess maybe 4 months of sobriety, physical sobriety for me. And I don't even think this might be a surprise to you. Dad didn't even know about this one. And so I got drunk that night, and I'm sure, you know, and it only took me, I got down quick. I'm an alcoholic that goes down very quick. I progress so quickly, it's unbelievable to me. And I, within a month, I was out partying with friends when I told my parents I was at soccer practice, and that's, you know, where I was supposed to be. And come midnight, I wasn't home. And come midnight, or 12:30, or sometime around then, I come home, and I don't even remember this, but this is what my parents tell me, and told me that I couldn't even sit in a chair, that I was so drunk, and I had been driving. And about 2 years before that, I had made a promise to myself that I would never drive drunk. I had my two best friends, my two best childhood friends, kids that grew up on the same block as I did, you know, we dreamed about going to Mexico together and things like that, you know, just the wild things. And these two guys died in a car accident from drunk driving. And I made a promise to myself that I would absolutely never drink and drive. And somehow I ended up doing it, you know, and I didn't want to. I didn't want to. And one thing about after my two friends' deaths, I had made a promise to myself that I was going to not drink. I didn't make a date, but I said indefinitely, I'm not going to drink alcohol. And I went maybe about 8 months, I think, and I didn't drink any alcohol. And I can use all kinds of justifications and rationalizations for my drinking, and our book has all kinds of examples of descriptions of alcoholics. And there's a description of an alcoholic in there. I think he was maybe 30 years old, and he stopped drinking for 25 years. And he thought that his long period of sobriety qualified him to drink safely. And I think very shortly after, maybe a couple of years, he ended up dead. And, you know, I fell to that delusion more than once. And several times, you know, I've had a lot of consequences from drinking alcohol, a whole lot. And you know, a lot of times I don't think that I thought that it was really related to alcohol. I didn't think it had anything to do with it. I was out having fun and partying. I have a history of being arrested on the same property 3 times, and that this, what I was doing on that property was pretty much the same exact thing each time, and I didn't think that was very abnormal for the first time and for the second time. And when what I was doing those first 2 times, I had started drinking, and I had run out of booze, and I needed some more. And I went, I knew where I could get some. I knew I could just jump a fence, snap a lock, and open the freezer, and there it was. It was a gold mine, you know? And I had a good old time, and it was Party City. And I had a real good time, and I did it once, and I got caught, and I did it again, and I got caught. And I did it again, and I got caught. my mother is a social worker, and she had all kinds of psychological assessments, or she had a psychological assessment done on me. And one thing that I was told by this guy that was reviewing my assessment, and I, you know, still can't believe this to this day, he told me that if I was to continue on the path that I was on, that if I was going to be a criminal, that I would be a very bad one. That I would end up spending a large portion of my life in jail. And that didn't even faze me. It had no effect on me. That guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And, you know, he must have misread something. one of the pictures I drew must have drawn a squiggly line instead of a straight line, or, you know, whatever I had done wrong, you know. And just, I didn't even affect me. Didn't even cross my mind. And I had, I didn't believe most things that people told me. My mother works with mental health and substance abuse. She's in that profession. And I disregarded just about everything that she said in relation to my alcohol consumption on the basis that, you know, this is my mom's profession. She has no business bringing her profession into my life. What is she doing? whatever kind of excuse I could come up with, and it was totally rational to me. It made complete sense. I had a lot of people doing a lot of good things for me. A lot of people pulling for me. That's what they'll probably tell you, is that they were pulling for me. You know, that's not how I felt, though. The way I felt is they were doing all this stuff to me. Why are they doing this to me? You know, why are they taking me away from my friends? Why are they taking me here? Why can't I go to this school that I used to go to? You know, you're going to put me here for a year? You know, you're going to do all this stuff to me? You know, I just felt like all this stuff was so unjustly being done to me. And what did I do to deserve all this? I mistreated my family so poorly. My twin sister that I went to see graduate today, I have a relationship with her today that I couldn't imagine. The first job I ever had, I worked at a Friendly's restaurant, ice cream place. And I got the job because she had worked there. And she was a reliable, dependable waitress. And so I just kind of got the job real easy, just got in there. And I was there a month, started stealing tips. I would be lazy with my customers, so sometimes they just leave and leave all the money on the table, and I just go and take it all, $30, and tell my manager, you know, oh, I don't know what happened to it. They left without paying. And I got caught doing all, you know, things there in the break room that I'm sure you can imagine I shouldn't have been doing. And I put her job in a compromising position. And that wasn't fair of me. I got that job because she was there, because she had proved herself. And I put her in a position that she, you know, she may have lost her job because of my actions. And I used her. I used her to get from A to B, you know, take me here, drop me off here. She knew where I was going. She knew what I was doing, you know. And I used her, and I used, just like I used everybody. That's the kind of person I am when I'm drinking, and even a lot of times when I'm not. Just because I'm sober doesn't mean I'm better. So, I've jumped around quite a bit. I still got plenty of time. So I mentioned that I'd been arrested three times, and insanely enough, it was all in the same property, pretty much. It was all owned by the same country club or whatever, and I was doing pretty much the same thing, and I got arrested for the last time on February 9th, 2003, and I was out with a couple of guys, and wrong place, wrong time is how I thought, and just like all of the things that happened to me, wrong place, wrong time, And I got arrested that night, and I didn't resist at all. I didn't run. I didn't hide. And I, like I always had before, I fought. I was a cop fighter. when I was drunk anyway, and I didn't do any of that. I just kind of gave up, and I realized it, and it just came to me. I didn't. You know, I couldn't cause this kind of change in my life. I cannot cause this kind of change in my mind to where, you know, these thoughts, just my whole mind changes. Is that I can't do this anymore. And this isn't something that I just one day wake up, you know, and things are different. From this experience, you know, I went off in the police car handcuffed, and I remember I had I was handcuffed and I had my cell phone in my pocket and I was able to get it out. They hadn't taken it from me and I called my parents and I said, I'm being arrested. And I said, can you guys come and get me? They said, have a nice trip. And they asked where my car was so they could come and get it. And what? How could you do this to me? And this is the best thing my parents have probably done for me. It really is. And at that point, my reliance upon the people that always bailed me out, I was out of luck, you know. I didn't have anywhere to turn anymore. Mom and Dad were done with me, and my friends, I don't think so. You know, they weren't going to raise any money to bail me out of jail, and I just didn't have any. I didn't have anywhere else to go, really, and it's not a natural thought for me to finally realize this, and I don't know how. Like I said, I have no idea how this change came about. I'm just very fortunate and glad that it did. That I finally realized that this is crazy. Third time, same place, same thing. I've been arrested for. I can't keep doing this. And the thought came that I can't drink safely. I can't do it. I've tried and I've tried and I've tried, and I can't drink safely. I can't control my drinking. When I start drinking, I just go off and I have no idea what's going to happen. Like the first time that I broke into that place, I just started drinking and I needed more. I needed it. So I had to find another place that I could go and get more. And that's how I acted when I got alcohol in my system. And I started drinking when I was 13 years old. My first drink was when I was 11, but it was one beer. So I can't even hardly remember that experience too much, honestly. And I started drinking to get drunk when I was 13. I didn't drink on a regular basis because it wasn't readily available. My last drink was that night, February 12th, 2003. And I drank for about 5 years. And I spent a couple nights in jail, and I got out of jail on the 11th, and I went to an AA meeting on the 12th. I got a sponsor on the 11th, the night that I got out of jail. I called the only guy on the side of town that I was currently on, and I asked him to sponsor me, and he said he would. And so I went to a meeting on the 12th, and I picked up a chip, and that's the date that I use to celebrate my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the date that I've been since I've been in AA, and that I've been active in recovery and had a sponsor. Like I said, ever since I've been in AA, I've always gone to 4 meetings a week. It's been a suggestion that was made to me, a strong suggestion, and it's proved to be pretty beneficial. I don't think that I would make the kind of progress I would in 3 meetings a week or 2 meetings a week or 1 meeting a week. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, I was too cool and too smart and too young, and I really didn't feel like I fit with most of the people in here. There are all kinds of different walks of life, you know, blue collar, white collar, young, old, and mostly old, though. That's how I felt. And I was a young guy. I was 18 years old. I don't belong here. I just don't belong. You know, this isn't right. There's something wrong with this. And I went to meetings for the first 4 months after that, just because I had to, because I was going to court. And I had a sponsor, and I went to meetings on a regular basis, and I got involved, and I started, I wanted to get the steps done before I went to court. I wanted to get them done. And I went through those steps as fast as I could. And do we have steps on the wall? No, we don't. That's interesting, because, you know, the way I used to do this program, because a lot of times you have steps on the wall, and I just used to see them, and I just check them off, you know? I see them on the wall, and I just check them off. And I had one of those books on that counter, like we have on the counter, the Alcoholics Anonymous, what we call the big book. I had one of those, but I didn't have any use for it. You know, I really didn't like reading, and I wasn't going to bother with it. And so that's the way that I work the steps. I just checked them off, and I went down the list and said, I can do that. I did that. I've done that. I don't need to do that. You know, that doesn't apply to me. And I just went on like that. And I got 4 months went by, and I went to court. And judge said, are you in school? I said, yes. He said, all right, come back to court the day after you graduate from high school. I graduated on Friday, and I went to court on Monday, and I went into jail that day. And so I went into jail, and I was there for about 2 months, and I came out of jail. And the first thing I did is I went right back into AA. You know, no excuse, no reason to sit around. No, you know, I'd spent 2 months up here. You know, I was a mess. I was a mess in jail, and you know, and I knew some nice people in AA. They came and visited me when I was in jail. I was so fortunate. And that's the first thing that I did when I got out of jail is I got right back into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a sponsor and I started working steps again. You know, I didn't think that I did them right the first time, working them off the wall, so I started doing them again. And the way that I did sponsorship, like, who in here would be a nice guy that won't push me around and won't make me do too much and won't hurt my feelings, won't step on my toes, and if I really don't want to do something, they're not going to make me do it. And pride doesn't do too much anyway, so won't make me do too much. And that's what I looked for in a sponsor. I didn't want to do very much here. You know, I really want to do the bare minimum, just enough to get by. You know, I want just enough to stay here and come home and say, yeah, hey, Mom, Dad, I went to an AA meeting. Life's good. You know, aren't I good? You know, I'm doing great, you know. And I went on like that for quite a while, and I jumped sponsor to sponsor. I've had, I think, 6 different sponsors, and I had 5 different sponsors in the first year and a half. I didn't like the one I had. I got another one. I wanted the perfect sponsor, and the one that would make me do the absolute least. And that's how I worked Alcoholics Anonymous for quite a while, and I didn't want to do very much here. I enjoyed the meetings. I enjoyed the fellowship. I could be here. I could sit here for an hour and talk about my problems, and that's what I did. I came to discussion meetings where, I remember, I could have a bad day. I love just coming in and unloading on the group. You know, I just unload. I've had such a bad day, and just tell the whole group, and I just share all my problems, and I loved it. I came to meetings and I loved talking about me. You know, because one thing about me, I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know about all alcoholics, but I know that this alcoholic is I'm a very self-centered, selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate person. So I don't mind coming into a meeting and talking about my problems and using up your time, which is what I was doing. And I don't mind coming and coming to a meeting and talking about myself and being real selfish, because I'm all about me, and I think that probably what I have going on in my life is more important than anybody else here, and I need a solution now. You know, and I need you to all focus in on my problem and deal with this, because I've got some big issues here. All right, and so I had a lot of problems, and I came to meetings, and I had so much problem. You know, I had a lot of problems. Billy was explaining to my father before the meeting a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous and the difference between recovering and just being in AA. I suppose is what it seemed like to me, and I did not recover as soon as I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I spent time in AA, but I did not recover. I came to meetings and I hung out and talked about problems, and I did what I wanted. That's what I did. I didn't do everything that I was told, and I dodged all kinds of responsibility because I didn't want it. I was quick little tangent. I was about 10 months sober, and I have a pretty good relationship with my father today, who's here tonight. But that wasn't the case when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, fortunately things do change. But I was living with my parents when I got sober, and you know, sometimes I just don't want to do what I should, and simple responsibilities that a normal person should do. And I was asked to take out the trash, I think is what the request was. And I used some four-letter words to explain why I shouldn't have to. And I was asked to leave the house. And I said, fine, I'll leave. My mom said, look, Luke, if you just apologize, you don't have to leave. I said, no, I'll leave. And, you know, I couldn't even take the trash out, you know. I can't even do something like that for somebody. And this is a spiritual program. You know, I was living a spiritual life. You know, I was really helping others. You know, I wasn't helping anybody but myself. You know, I was in this thing for me. You know, that's what I thought, you know, that was my attitude about the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that if this thing is going to benefit me in any way, then I'm all for it. You know, but if I have to go out of my way to do something for you, you know, and be inconvenienced just the slightest bit, I'm not interested. You know, I don't have time. I got a lot of things to do. You know, I'm a real busy guy. I've got a lot of stuff to take care of for myself. And I was really only interested in myself. And really, you know, and that if I thought the steps would help me, I did the steps that I thought would help me. Tell you what, I did a four-step, and I loved doing that because I really thought that getting those things off my chest and getting a sponsor and having them sit there and be a hostage and reading those things to a sponsor and, you know, that was going to help me. You know, that was, and that's what I did, share my problems in meetings. And I was only interested in these things that would benefit me. And that's what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was how can this benefit me? What am I going to get out of this? You know, and where's my payoff? You know, and I, you know, I'm all about me. And that's how I did AA for a year and a half. And like I said before, I'm a selfish and self-centered person. I'm a taker of things and a user of people. And that didn't change when I got sober. I was using you people, you know, even in AA. I'm going to use you to be my therapist. I'm going to share my problems with you and get, you know, I want some free therapy. And that's how it went around for quite a while. And eventually, you know, I don't know how to say it in a more simple way than this. I think that if you stay around AA long enough and all you do is take like I did, eventually you just can't take anymore. There's just not any more to take. Because you can't take so much from AA. I mean, all we have is alcoholism. You know, we got steps. You can take the steps, and maybe you won't be so much of a taker anymore. But, you know, that's all. You know, we don't have much to take. And I ran out of things to take. And I got to a point where I didn't feel like there was much for me to left in AA. You know, there wasn't much reason for me to go to AA anymore. I've been coming here for a year and a half on a regular basis, and the pay just wasn't coming anymore, you know? I just wasn't feeling good when I left meetings as much as I used to, you know. Sometimes I would feel good about, you know, I'd hear some poor sucker share about their life, and I would think, ha, well, I'm doing so much better than them, you know. I'm so glad I come to these meetings still, you know. I can hear about, you know, these poor guys, you know. I'm doing pretty good. And that's not what meetings are for, you know. It's not for me to feel better about at somebody else's expense. I have to have strong sponsorship that tells me that gives me clear direction. Basically, I have to have sponsorship that gives me an idea of what to do when I have no idea what to do, and I have to have sponsorship that tells me this is what you should do, even when you think you should do this. Because I've got a lot of good ideas, and I have a lot of ideas of what I should do and what I shouldn't have to do. And I did all that in my first year and a half. And I did a lot of what I thought I should do and what I thought I shouldn't have to do. I just went about my business and did whatever I wanted to and did what was convenient and didn't do what was inconvenient, you know. And I started to go to meetings when they were convenient and when they were not convenient. And I got a home group, and I went to that home group when I felt like it, and I went when I didn't feel like it. I heard a guy named Dick Martin from Nebraska talk about home groups, and that he was telling a story about about going to your home group no matter what. One day, I was working outside in the yard, I think, with my girlfriend, and stopped and had lunch. It was good, and then come the evening time, I was getting ready to go to a meeting around 5:30. Left around 6. Right as I was leaving, I was walking out the door, and I had to run back in, and I had to throw up. So, well, I got to go to my meeting anyway. This is my home group. And I went to the meeting. It was about a half-hour drive, about halfway there. I had to pull over and I had to throw up. and about 15 minutes before the meeting was over, I really couldn't wait for it to end, but I didn't want to inconvenience anyone, so I sat through the meeting, and as soon as it was over, I ran out the door, and I basically fell over to the ground and threw up, and I was trying to figure out what it was. It looked like I was puking blood. I had eaten some bad raspberry jelly that day. It was all coming back up, and I was scared to death. And this guy had talked about going to your home group no matter what, and that's what I was doing. This is the guy that I had heard some speaker tapes from, like you have over on that table, and it sounded like this stuff worked for him. And I had gotten to a point where my way in AA wasn't working. That me coming and taking from you all and sharing my problems and all of what I did, I got to a point where it didn't work anymore. To where I just didn't feel like I was getting any better anymore. And I got to a point where I was just ready to try something different. And I had to stop doing all the things that I thought were right in AA, because I didn't know what was right in AA. I had no idea what I should be doing in AA. I didn't know how to act. And I started to listen to those kind of tapes and doing things that were suggested that, you know, a lot of times I didn't think that these things really made a lot of sense, you know. I didn't really see much reason for me to travel 5 or 6 or 8 hours or, you know, an hour or whatever and spend my weekend with a bunch of alcoholics at some hotel listening to some old guy talk. You know, it didn't make any sense to me. Or doing any of that kind of stuff. It didn't make sense to me that I should have a home group and have a job in it, you know. What benefit do I get from getting to my home group an hour early and making coffee? It doesn't matter what kind of benefit I get, because I'm not in this thing for me anymore. This isn't a selfish program, is what I'm trying to get to, I suppose, is that I treated Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and sponsorship as if it was all to my benefit for a year and a half, and that this was all about me and how can it benefit me, and what am I going to get out of this? And no, there doesn't seem to be much payoff in making coffee, and that's why I need to do it, you know? Because it's not about me, you know. And sometimes I show up in my own group, and it's like no one appreciates me, you know. But I still do my job. Doesn't matter because it's not about me. It's not about me getting appreciated. It's not about me getting any kind of gratification. It's not about payoff. It's not about that. That's not what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. I've come to find out. And that's what I make it about. That's what I naturally. That's just what I do. That's just who I am, is I want to make everything in my life about me. How can I make this situation benefit me? How can I make it work out to help me out, you know? Because I'm always thinking about me. You know, rarely am I thinking about the guy next to me or, you know, the person that I work with or, you know, the person I'm in a relationship with or my boss or my family or anyone. I'm, you know, on a regular basis, I'm thinking about me. You know, I've got a Mother's Day card, and it's still sitting in my car, and I meant to take it with me today and write something in it, but I couldn't do it because all I could do this morning was think about what am I going to say tonight, you know? And I wasn't thinking about that car. I was thinking about me, you know? And my constant thought of me prevents me from thinking about others, you know, on a regular basis. It gets me caught up all the time. Yeah. So, self-help is not what Alcoholics Anonymous is. If I could help myself, I wouldn't have to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I could help myself, I would never need a sponsor. I wouldn't need any steps. wouldn't need fellowship. I wouldn't need God. I wouldn't need anything. I could help myself. And I tried to help myself. And me trying to help myself ended me up in jail, ended me up in rehabs and all kinds of places, and getting kicked out of the house, and with a lot of burned bridges, and a lot of hurt relationships, and a lot of poorly done things caused by me in my life. You know, I've done a lot of harm, and that's all by me helping myself. And I didn't intend to hurt people. You know, that wasn't my intent throughout my life, drunk or sober, but it happened a lot. When I know that I can't help myself anymore, there's not many other ways to go, I don't think. You know, when I've gotten to that point where I absolutely know that I can't help myself, I don't know where else to go. Alcoholics Anonymous is what I've heard about for years now is the solution to all my problems, which is like, wow, all my problems. You gotta be kidding me. All of them. Every single one? Really? No. I doubt it. I doubt it, you know? And sometimes I still do doubt it. Sometimes I still do. But you know what I do is I just trust in what these old guys that I didn't relate to at all, that were, you know, made me too young and too cool and too smart because they were too old and too, you know, too smelly and all kinds of things, and I was just too different from, you know, I listen to these guys and people that have been active in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, and a lot of times these suggestions and these things that they tell, that they talk about, don't make sense to me, and I don't understand how that they could fit into my life or how I could benefit, because that's, you know, what I'm in it for. It's all about me. How can I benefit from it? And I don't understand how these things are going to work for me. And I didn't, you know, honestly, before I ever even did the steps, I didn't think that they would work for me. I really didn't. And I didn't think that, you know, I didn't think that they would work for me. And I didn't think I needed them. But when I got to the point where I had nowhere else to go, I gave them a try. And it doesn't, you know, one thing I've heard several times in Alcoholics Anonymous is it doesn't matter what it doesn't matter if I think that this is going to work. It doesn't matter why I'm giving it a try. What matters is that I just do it, you know, that I do the steps and that I take these suggestions. It doesn't matter whether or not I think these steps are going to work for me, you know, because I didn't think that these steps would work for me when I got here. I really didn't think so before I got here and when I got here. And some of the, you know, certain steps I didn't think would work for me for a while, even after I got here. And each one of the steps works, even for me, even when you're too cool and too young and too smart, you know, or whatever you are, whatever you may be, because that's just what I thought I was. It's not what I am. That's what I thought I was. I'm just a young guy who got to Alcoholics Anonymous at a convenient time, I suppose, and got beat up enough by alcohol to where I was ready eventually to take certain things, certain steps that I didn't believe in, that you know, I didn't think would work for me, that eventually did. I was asked yesterday to pick up a guy from some hotel and bring him to this conference that you guys had in town. I don't know, some of you I don't recognize, so maybe you weren't there, but you know, I've never met this guy. Somebody in Richmond called me and said that somebody from Los Angeles was in town and needed a ride to this thing tomorrow, and would I take him? And I said, sure, I'd take him. And I've never met the guy, you know, no idea what he was like. And I picked this guy up at 7:15 in the morning. And it's requests like that come out of nowhere in Alcoholics Anonymous that I have to answer yes to. and seemed, yeah, ended up being a real nice guy. Made me feel like a real newcomer. He had his wife on the phone, and he said something about, I won't repeat it, actually. He said something about newcomers committing suicide. And until you do the steps, you know, that's how a lot of newcomers may feel. You know, it's that, you know, without a spiritual solution in our lives, you know, there's no friendly direction here. You know, I was an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had tried everything I could on my own. And I tried everything everything, you know, that I had been taught, you know, and none of it worked. And you know, when we get here, you know, alcohol is removed, hopefully, you know. If we plan on staying here, it's a good idea to quit drinking. And it's absolutely necessary if you're going to do the steps, I think. There's no reason to do the steps drunk. Well, I don't have very much more to say, Billy, but I want to thank you all for having me out here, and I really look forward to coming out, and I appreciate you all listening to me talk, and thank you very much.